Homajnanatimadannasyajnananjanashalakaya chakshurunmuditam dhena tasmai shri gurave namah.
Perfect. Building on your practice. Excellent.
For me, honestly, I don't really have experience in yoga or meditation. So when my friend here introduced it to me and said, okay, it's time to try it out and see how it goes. Yeah.
Good. Good. Be courageous. Take risks.
Yeah.
Okay. Good.
It's the same for me. We've got two kids. Try to read about it. YouTube, work, or we can have the discipline. So I thought,
yeah. Good. Good idea. There's strength in numbers. Yeah. Excellent.
For me, it's more to do with attention and being mindful to the little things that happen around us. We are busy, and so many things are happening around us, and there's so much noise. From the phone, from everywhere. So I'm very interested to be more mindful of the little things and interactions with other people that can really make an impact on others as well as myself. Connect more on a personal level rather than just pure work.
I'm so glad to hear that. We're going to talk about both those things, noise and also relationships today. Two of those things I'll definitely cover. We're just introducing ourselves and saying why we came today. Not at all.
So, I mean, I generally find it really hard to switch off, especially in a place like Salesforce, where there's so many tools and people can talk all the time, very expensive things, like at last minute notice. So, and I'm always like rushing, but I'm sure there's another way to do it. So.
Fantastic. Well, this is great. It gives me a lot to work from, knowing why you're here. And I'm here because I really appreciate the lifestyle of mindfulness. I've been practicing it for many years. There's always more to learn, and I learn so much by passing on what I've learned. The more I give, the more I feel I grow. So I just somehow I've fallen into this groove of public speaking in many different places, and it just so happens that it's really a popular subject right now all around the world. I think all at once we're all sort of feeling a little bit pressurized by the environment of the world and the way things are going. So it's an appropriate time, and I'm really happy to be able to pass on just a few things today that hopefully you can take home as actual keys. I think of it as a keychain, just like on the top of your page there. I have three main topics I'm going to talk about today, so keep it kind of simple, because I believe that if you have a principle that you can work with, and that's what I'm using it to be synonymous with a key, you keep it on your keychain, and when you need it, you can pull it out and use it, and hopefully it'll help you. So when we talk about fulfillment, first I'd like to say that we can think of ourselves maybe a little bit differently than we do at some times, and that is that we are containers. And I bring that up in the context of contentment and fulfillment, because I noticed some time ago that the word content and content are spelled the same way. But really, the level of contentment that we feel depends on the content we have in us. And if we think that of ourselves as containers, in one sense, our minds are containers. We take in so many things and we hold them there, don't we? And our hearts are that way too. There are many poems and songs that talk about what people are holding in their hearts. And so one way to organize one's life around the principle of fulfillment is to think, what am I filling myself up with? What is the content? What am I actually putting in my mind? What am I putting in my heart? So the first thing on the list is you are a container, and remember that. And actually, as humans, we're really sensitive. Have you ever noticed that you're sensitive? We're sensitive to our environment, even more than we know. There are a lot of, I couldn't put it another way, we're porous. We take in vibrations, we take in the kinds of association we have with others, the kind of speech we hear. Everything actually counts, and it all goes in. So remember that you're a container, and that your content equals your contentment. So what you have inside you will determine how you feel, how you're able to be mindful or feel fulfillment. Some of the things we can fill up on are not as wholesome as others. So the first principle, which I bring up as a principle because it's a practice and it can be cultivated, is gratitude. Now, gratitude is something that almost instantly leads to fulfillment. Have you ever noticed that if you're feeling gratitude, that it doesn't matter what else is going on in your life or what other things you have or don't have, that you feel satisfied? On the other side, if you don't have gratitude, it doesn't matter what you have or what situation you're in, you can still feel discontent. And you can feel, if you're ungrateful, no matter what you're given and no matter what situation you're in, you still feel restless and non-content. Have you ever noticed that about gratitude? So the gratitude is something that can be practiced, because it's actually reality that at every moment we're receiving gifts, and oftentimes I forget about them. For instance, was there a sunrise today? Say yes. Yes, there was a sunrise today. Did I notice it? Maybe not. Maybe I didn't notice it yesterday or the day before or the day before that. It's actually the biggest event of the day. I mean, what is it anyway? I can take that for granted. The sun's coming up, and oftentimes yogis will, wait for that time. They get up before sunrise just to marvel at the fact that the sun's rising. It can be a mind-blowing experience. But I'm hurrying. I'm on my way somewhere. The sun's in my eyes. I don't consider what it is or who I am or where I am. But if I had a moment to appreciate what it is, I mean, everything we eat is really sun energy. And everything that we see around us is transformation of the sun. We couldn't live for a second without it. So all around us, there are marvelous events unfolding. Not the least of which our own bodies. We're constantly moving around in these, what I like to call biomechanical robots. And it is basically a robot that we're moving around in. And it's going on, and I never really think about it. Do you think about your digestion? Did anybody have breakfast? Are you digesting right now? Did you ever think about it? I mean, there's a miraculous process going on right now where the enzymes are breaking down some biofuel that you put in there, and it's distributing. The glucose is going to your brain. That's how you're able to think. And there's many other functions in your body, and everything's just sort of going on in a miraculous way. But I hardly think about it. I just eat and then move on to the next thing. So when we talk about mindfulness and contentment, one of the aspects is gratitude. Stopping and looking at, you could actually do it with anything and look at it and appreciate, like, what is this? Where did it come from? Recently, I just came from Sweden, and there I'm working with a publishing company, and they took me a tour of the place where they make paper and then where they make books. Some of them are handmade. And after that, I started appreciating books a lot more. I look at a book and think, where did it come from? Who's involved with it, and so forth. So this gratitude is the first key on the chain. And as I go through this, I'm going to stop at intervals and just ask for reflections. Like, anything you heard, any point that picked your interest, that's something that you found interesting or useful that you can take away with you, and you just reflect it back. A while back, I heard about our appreciating capacity. Each one of us, and appreciation and gratitude are practically synonymous. First of all, that each one of us has a capacity to appreciate, but you can expand that capacity, just like you can any other capacity you have of, for instance, your reading capacity or your capacity to do certain physical skills, you can increase it. So similarly, you can increase your appreciating capacity. And just one other thought that goes with this is a mantra I heard once that goes along with this quite well, is whatever you appreciate, appreciates. As in when you have an investment and you say your investment is appreciating, meaning it grows. So the concept goes, if when you appreciate something or someone, then that thing grows in you. It grows in your life, and it gives dividends. Voltaire, I'll quote here in that regard. He said, appreciation is a wonderful thing. It makes what is excellent in others belong to us as well. So when I see qualities in another person and I'm able to appreciate them, have gratitude for them, my heart opens and it's their qualities enter within me. So I actually take on the good qualities of others by appreciating. So this gratitude and appreciation is a very powerful force in the world, and any one of us can take advantage of it. It's almost a discipline. It is a discipline, something that you can employ in your lives. So now I'll take a few reflections. Anything that you heard so far that stuck?
I can share my experience around appreciation, for example, with my family. I'm from Argentina. And when I was living there, I didn't have the same level of appreciation that when I go now to visit, and everything feels so magic. So I think that's a good example. And the other example would be the weather. So the weather in Argentina is like this every day. So I started appreciating it much more.
Nice. Yeah. You don't know what you got till it's gone, is an old saying from a song. And that's one way to appreciate and see, you know, if you lose what you have or move away from it for a while, you can go back and appreciate it more. What else did you hear?
But, like, is that the key? Like, do we need to actually consciously move away from things in order to appreciate them? Like, can we just do it?
Yeah, you can just do it. You can definitely just do it from any position. Just happens kind of naturally, though, when things are taken away from us. And I wish I had that back. I didn't appreciate it as much as I could have. But oftentimes people say, you know, for instance, if somebody loses somebody, and then I wish I had taken more time to appreciate them. So the reason I bring it up is because it is something that you can take advantage of right now. And you know, when we come together to talk about these things, it raises awareness, which is the most beneficial thing for us to do. And when we become aware of it, we can actually take advantage of it and cultivate gratitude. Yes, it's cultivation. What other things did you hear? Yeah.
And that can be increased. How can we increase it? Because obviously I understand that we can be more appreciative of, like, the sun rising and all these things. But because of the busy life, it feels like we never have enough time to be appreciative of everything that we have. So how do you pick the things that really mean more to you to make a difference? Because in that way we can always be appreciative of the sun rising every day, but then we could be missing on some other things because we have limited amount of brain power to process all of these things.
That's an interesting prospect too. You know, a world that's so overwhelmingly nice, I don't have enough time to appreciate everything. It's really like a wedge in some ways. It starts on a small end. And if you apply it in a small way, and then you keep applying a little pressure, it opens up more and more capacity, just like a wedge would do. So when it's systemic. It's just like discipline. If you practice any discipline in your life, it affects all the other disciplines that you have. You realize more capacity to be disciplined, and therefore other parts of your life start to be affected as well. So it's a similar thing with gratitude. When you practice it in small ways, with starting anywhere, wherever you can, then it starts to be a different perspective, a way of looking at the world. It helps you to move into that kind of a consciousness, seeing the world not just, we're not, as a friend of mine once said, are you a human being or a human doing? Can you just appreciate being for a minute rather than having to do something in order to prove yourself to yourself? So the next aspect of this cultivation of gratitude, in fact, it's a next step. When you're appreciating something or someone, there's a sense that you'd like to do something for them. This is what I call service mind. This is a well-known principle, but it's one that's often overlooked. Often I'm thinking in defense mode that I have to, the more I can get for myself, the more I can take for myself, the more I'm on the offense, then perhaps this is progress, I might think. But the yoga texts say that if you flip the switch and think in terms of having a service mind, and that is, how can I do good for others? How can I give back something? Because when you feel gratitude, there's an overflow, and it's something that you can give back for. And in the service mind, the world looks different. First of all, there's a lot of opportunities, because there's always service that one can do. And secondly, it takes us away from the smaller perspective that I might have at the moment. Dale Carnegie wrote a book called, many years ago, How to Stop Worrying and Start Living. He compiled many. Have you read that? Yeah. Did it help?
I worry less.
Yeah, worry less too. It's a good book. In it, he mentions many scenarios and ways to take yourself out of the smaller perspective of worry. And one of them is that when you're undergoing some kind of anxiety or trauma in your own life, think about how to do good for somebody else. And when you do that and you step out in the service mode, then you grow and you gain a higher perspective that takes you out of the smaller world where you're experiencing anxiety. So another thing is, when people are in service mind, practically they're very much welcome wherever they go, as there's a space for you everywhere. Everyone likes someone who's service oriented, thinking about how to do good for others. Whereas in the mode of encroachment or thinking how I can dominate, there's a lot of competition in the world. Everyone's battling for the same rare resources to try to contain them, keep them, and so forth. So the service mind is a very powerful way to feel contentment. It's like a switch that you can flip, and when you do, thinking in terms of how can I do good for others, rather than simply thinking about my own status quo or how to get ahead individually, then counterintuitively, I feel satisfied. And this is one of the main points that's made in the yoga texts, which talks about how to organize your life in such a way that you can have fulfillment in everything that you do. Do the things that you do as a service, rather than thinking about how it's going to make you more comfortable or temporarily happy. And that brings me to the point I alluded to a little earlier about the human being versus a human doing. And that is, realize and focus more on what you are more than what you have. We may have or think we have many things. If we actually have something, it means we get to keep it, but we really ultimately don't get to keep anything. But when I identify myself with all the things that I have and they're beyond my control, then I can feel a lot of anxiety. I'll give you an example. Does anybody here drive, or do you all take the tube to get here? walking. Does anybody have a car? No cars anymore. That's pretty good. Well, let me use another example, perhaps. Well, I'll use a car example. And because Devesh has a car, and we'll use him as our guinea pig for this. So let's say Devesh came here and he parked his car just downstairs. And let's just say we're sitting here and he knows his car is parked there, and we hear another car careening around the corner going at high speed, and it sounds like it hit Devesh's car. Now, he was sitting here peacefully, but now all of a sudden he hears the sound, and how does he feel now? Stressed, and what are the symptoms? Physical symptoms.
Increased heart rate.
Yes. Increased heart rate. What else?
He stops listening to you.
Stops listening here. Any other physical symptoms? Adrenaline goes up, maybe perspiration, right? And let's say he runs to the window to look out to see what happened to his car. He also forgot to buy insurance last month, so that lapsed. It's all going through his mind, right? And then he looks out, and it's not his car. It's Nir's car. She parked her car out there too. So now how does Devesh feel? Pretty much fine all of a sudden. And how does Nir feel? Adrenaline, heartbeat goes up, things like that. So a car is a car. It's made out of glass and rubber and metal and so forth. But there's a difference between a car and all the other cars in London and my car, because I identify with it. And I have many things in my life, things that I identify with, and I say, these are my things. And when something happens to them, when they change, when they're taken or they wear out or something like that, then this is a cause of anxiety for me. But the yoga scriptures point out that actually we don't have to depend on things to be happy. In fact, it's recommended that we don't become overly attached to them as my things, but we see them as things that I'm using now in service. And when I do that, then those things don't become such a huge burden upon me. Furthermore, we are something. There's a difference between the physical body and mind, which is like software, and the body is compared to hardware. Of course, this is a more modern example that doesn't come in the ancient yoga literatures, but it's a very apt description. But we're something beyond that, that's the operator of this software and hardware. And the process of meditation is to become more aware of who we actually are. In my mind, I'm thinking always that I need to become something or get something else. But in inward thinking and inward looking processes, we're able to see that I actually am something already. I don't need to become anything else. What I am is something that is so fulfilling that just by being that thing, I'm satisfied in the moment. In fact, in the Gita, one of the famous books on yoga, it says when one has this realization, which is available to anyone by introspection and meditation, then one has an experience where he or she thinks, I've gotten something where there's no greater gain. And it's simply something I've forgotten about. There's a story in the ancient texts about a poor man, and he's lamenting his lot in life. And then a person walking by sees him and begins to talk to him, say, how are you doing? Just starts a conversation, and the poor man's telling him about how he doesn't have any prospect in life. He's been estranged from his family. He's downtrodden and so forth. And then the passerby says, one thing I noticed, you have something around your neck. It's some kind of necklace or something. And the poor man says, oh. And he looks down and he notices, and then he pulls out the necklace, and it turns out there's a valuable jewel on the end. And he said, oh, I forgot I had this. And so the yoga texts compare this to the way in which we may be looking externally at many things that we have and thinking, I need another thing, another thing. And we may also get caught in a whirlpool of anxiety. But one thing I've forgotten is who I actually am. What is my inner existence? And by seeing that, just by glimpsing it, even for a second, it gives one this sense of inner fulfillment through which one is able to overcome all the various changes that are going on in the outside world. And now I'm going to stop again and take a couple of reflections. Anything that you heard that stuck in your mind?
Well,
yes.
So I'm kind of a bit confused because I find it contradicting. Like, you have to develop the service mind, so we need to serve others. But the same thing, at the same time, we can't identify ourselves with, for example, other people or cars. Or, so it kind of sounds selfish because we need to think about ourselves. So, you know, when our heart is hurt, it doesn't hurt us. When my, you know, family's hurt, it doesn't hurt me. That's how I understand it. So I find it's a bit contradicting.
Yeah, that would be only in a situation where someone's just instantly reacting to what's happening. And ideally, if I'm not attached to the things that I have completely, then I'm able to look at it philosophically. In fact, that's how we all deal with things ultimately when something happens to us that goes against our plan. We become philosophical. Like, what happens if somebody hits my car? And your friend said, oh, your car got wrecked. Then what do I say? Oh, it's just a car. Or if you lose, you know, if you lose something, it was just money. Don't worry, you can get something else. We naturally discriminate between that which is important and that which isn't important. In a pinch, we all do that. For instance, when there's a fire or a flood, what do people save first? Television, watches, or the parakeet, or the cat or the dog. Have you seen this? Like when there's floods, people are going in their houses, they're coming out with their dog. I saved my dog. Right? If he leaves the dog or the kid inside and it comes out with the television, everyone's going to, you're really, there's something wrong with you. So it's natural for us to actually, but in the moment when things happen, obviously there's we're going to have some kind of visceral reaction. But yoga and this philosophy of understanding gives us a higher perspective in which to process it. It would be superhuman to be able to rise above all the things that happen to us in life. Not only that, we might be rendered cold and uncaring. So we're operating on these two levels. But introspection, yoga, and this perspective helps us to process it in a much different way.
I had a reflection about service mind. I think I really have that mindset, which sometimes is not serving me as a person because I feel people rely on me and then I help people, which I love doing, but then I stop focusing on myself. So it's like, how do you prevent people from taking advantage of that? Because some people would naturally rely on you or lean on you a bit too much. I mean, from my perspective anyway.
Yeah, it's a really good point. Yeah. And one of the answers is what I alluded to earlier, is having this sense of our inner nature, our spiritual nature. And that comes through developing one's own regular practice of introspection. Because when we feel completely whole and we have a sense of what we are that's not going to change, then there's a kind of spiritual integrity that we develop inwardly that allows us to balance properly. So when we're dealing with other people and we're offering service, we also know what the boundaries are as well. And I've heard this a lot too in corporate environments. There can be a kind of a competitive spirit. Probably not here in London though, right? Or at Salesforce?
Probably not Salesforce, yeah.
What's that?
Probably not here at Salesforce.
Probably not here at Salesforce, but in other corporate environments I hear that sometimes when I talk about service. But what it doesn't mean is that you become a doormat for every person and everything. It just means that you're thinking in ways in a different way of how I can do good for others. But it doesn't mean that you deplete yourself by doing so. Mm-hmm. That requires some balance.
I was referring to the corporate environment, more my private life.
In private life, yeah. So there too, you know, it requires a sense of balance, because there are people who are, and what are called in Sanskrit, grahas, they're grabbers. They'll grab, you know, your attention and take advantage. So there's also a way in which you have to balance at the same time and know what your boundaries are.
I find it quite difficult because most people don't do it in a malicious way. Around me, they just sort of get, they're used to it. They're used to it. Let's call Miriam. It's gonna help me do this and do that, and I find it hard to find a balance between looking after myself and looking after others, just because, you know, I'm used to looking after others before I look after myself.
Interesting. Very interesting. Well, that's a bigger topic, you know, and it goes back to what I was saying before about finding inward balance and so forth. There's more to say about that. I'm going to move on to the next section. And this next one is very practical. This is uncluttering your life. Professional organizers have a term for all the extra things we might have in our environment. Does anybody here have any extra things that they don't need in their home, apartment, car, anywhere else? You don't have cars. in your homes or apartments or anywhere else? Yes, yes. It happens. Things float in. People give you things. You get things you thought you wanted, you didn't need, that you outgrew things. I interviewed a professional organizer once, and she referred to all these extra things as what is called visual noise. They come into our environment and they take up a lot of our concentration. There's a way in which when the environment is simplified, we consciously and deliberately remove the things that we have around us that we're not using, that aren't vital for our work and our service. And we take them out, recycle them, give them away, whatever you have to do. Then it gives us a way of feeling more serene just by the environment. This in the Bhagavad Gita is called sattva. Everyone say sattva. Sattva is a modality that one can reach just by uncluttering one's environment and being careful to essentialize everything, keep the things that you need and don't keep other things. That's external. Now the internal process, because inside my mind I also have a lot of clutter. And the way to do that is to prioritize. One of the best tools I've ever found for doing that, I prioritize which things I can do something about and which things I can't. And this helps to bring a sense of calm and fulfillment. And if you look at the chart here, this was created by Stephen Covey in his book called 7 Secrets of Highly Effective People. And it's got two circles. The inner circle is called my circle of influence. That means things that I can do something about, situations I can actually affect. And the bigger outer circle, and I think it should be much larger, is my circle of concern. There are many things in my life that I look at and I can't do anything about. Can you name one or two? Like you might look at the newspaper, for instance, and you see 5 things on the front page that put you in anxiety, but can you do anything about them? Can you name one? don't even bring it up. Okay. You know what I'm talking about. So from moment to moment, this simple diagram is very helpful internally for uncluttering, because anxieties may float into my consciousness. And if you use this, these two circles, and think, is this within my circle of influence? Is this something I can do something about right now? Or is it something in my circle of concern? And if it's in concern, then come back, let it go. because you don't have to hold on to it. There's nothing you can really do about it. And if you take these two circles and consider what should be in where you're staying is in your circle of influence, not in your circle of concern, then you'll feel this natural sense of uncluttering the internal world. And the third part of that uncluttering is to have a clear map. And this may sound counterintuitive because you think, well, spiritual means just free-flowing and doing whatever I want from moment to moment, which is true in one sense. But in another sense, the mind, when it's untrained or unruly, can spin into many different areas and take us in ways that cause anxiety. So Og Mandino once said many years ago, never greet the dawn without a map. If you have even a simple idea, you'll notice this if you try it, when you start your day, you write down the three most important things that you have to do for that day. Then you'll develop a sense of calm because you have an idea that I have a progression of things to do, the priority of things to do, and move ahead on. And the last key, what's the first one? First key we talked about?
Gratitude.
And the second is? Yes, unclutter your life. And the third is attention. And in one sense, each one of us, as conscious beings, we could say very technically, we're units of attention. And I would even go further and say, the main thing that we actually have is the discriminating power of where to place our attention. That's the real free will that we have, is where I'm going to place my attention in any given moment. And it makes a huge difference in many different areas in our life. One is alluded to by a mantra, which I'll mention now. This is a mantra that will help in the process of inner fulfillment and also in managing your time. And the mantra goes like this: where attention goes, energy flows. Would you like to try it? Please say, where attention goes, energy flows. Wherever you place your attention, your energy is going to naturally go in that direction. As far as relationships go, which is one of the areas of life that leads to a sense of fulfillment, I will contend that the quality of our relationships depend very much on the quality of attention that we give people. Recently, when I was at a meeting, it was a very detailed meeting and had to be fully concentrated for some time, and I was on a break, sitting by myself, just trying to focus my thoughts, and a very enthusiastic colleague came and sat next to me, wanting to share a lot of thoughts about the seminar. And I was thinking, I wanted to have a little time, but then I hadn't seen this person in a long time, so I thought, I have a choice. I can give full attention or I can give half-hearted attention. So I decided to give full attention, and I actually turned my chair to face that person and look and give him my full attention. Practically he jumped and he said, "Wow, thank you very much." And I was thinking, well, what did I actually do? What did I offer you besides my attention? And you'll notice that when you give full attention to somebody, it's practically synonymous with friendship. It's practically synonymous even with love when you're offering somebody your undivided attention. When you're doing it half-heartedly, people will notice. Conscious living beings are very much aware of whether you're giving full attention or not. You're kind of smiling. What are you thinking? It's true, right? What instance comes to your mind?
I was paying attention for 5-10 minutes, and then I zoned out. 10 people could tell.
Yeah, and so like even not 5-10 minutes, but even if you do it for half a second, like you tried an experiment. If you're telling me about how your morning started, you want to tell me a few things?
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. What was that? No, see, you're telling me something important in your life, and then I start diverting my attention elsewhere, like to a phone. That's possible somebody could do that, right?
Yeah.
Or even at a shorter period of time, if you're talking to me and I all of a sudden go like this, you might start thinking, oh, he's not interested in what I'm saying. This is how powerful our consciousness, our conscious attention is. When we're giving it somewhere and undivided, even when I'm doing seminars, I ask the audience if there's no clock in the room, if I have permission to look at my watch. Because I've noticed if I'm talking and all of a sudden I go like that, it breaks the connection. So this attention is a very powerful place to look. And not only does it foster relationships, giving quality attention, but also what you're giving attention to will develop the content that you have within your heart and mind. So according to the yoga teachings, there are higher and lower vibrations in the world. There are sound vibrations that are inherently higher and spiritual, and there are vibrations that are lower, come from a lower energy. And when you give your attention to higher vibrations, for instance, there in meditation practice, there's such a thing called a mantra. A man means mind and tra means to deliver. So it's a particular vibration that helps to deliver the mind from anxieties. And if you give your attention to that, then your mind will naturally be elevated. And if you give your attention to lower kinds of vibrations, then you'll find yourself pulled downward. Your consciousness will be affected by that. So where you place your attention throughout the day, and where you do it deliberately in your spiritual practice, like in your meditation, will have a direct correlation to your level of contentment and fulfillment. Reflections. Anything that you heard in the last two sections that stuck. Or if you have a question. The last point I make on the page is start a home practice of mantra meditation. So meditation in and of itself is meant to help to focus the mind. And it's something that you have to practice. Because the mind is like a horse, say the yoga literatures. And of course, you only get one mind. You're not going to get a different one. So you have to learn to live with the one you have. And the Bhagavad Gita says, the mind can be your best friend or it can be your worst enemy. So the mind that's trained to focus becomes like a horse that becomes friendly. And it's like, hey, hop on, take you wherever you want to go. But a horse that's unbridled or that is untrained can be very wild and unhelpful as far as a human relationship goes. So the mind is the same way. So mantra meditation is a way that one can start in a very simple way with practicing just for a minute or so. And by doing that, the mind starts to feel satisfied by focusing in one place. And you carry that satisfaction with you wherever you go. And it allows you to be more effective when you're working and doing other things that require all kinds of multitasking and so forth in the rest of your life. It doesn't require that much, but if you start with a home practice and you have a little bit every day, you'll notice that it'll start to pervade your life. Other reflections or questions?
I think for me on this circle of influence and certain things that is very clear, I know is certain things that is concern, but there's a few things that is on the border that it hard to pinpoint where to place. So what do you do with those?
Well, deliberation. You know, if you look at them very carefully and deliberate over them, then that's another word that I like. There's content and content, and there's deliberation, and then you can deliberate and become deliberate. It's spelled the same way, but it has two different meanings. When you deliberate on something, look at it carefully. See how much you can actually do. If there is something you can do, then by all means, do it. But identify what it is. It's that amorphous area that where I have an uneasy feeling that I'd like to do something, but I don't know what to do. But if you actually take that step and deliberate on it carefully, a lot of things float around and they come back around at intervals. And then I think, oh, I should do something about that. And then it goes away. But if you list them and see, these are some of the things I'd like to deliberately do something about, then find out, what can I do? And if there's nothing you can do, then unclutter, let it go. So deliberation is actually a part of yoga. Deliberate on what's important in your life, prioritize, and see these things carefully and make an inventory of them. It really helps to keep the mind orderly. And from an orderly mind comes a natural sense of fulfillment. The premise of the yoga teachings is we are actually higher beings living in an environment that requires us to prioritize and discipline a little bit, and then we can live in harmony with it. The Atma, or the self, is a higher vibration. My wife tapped her watch, so I looked at my watch. Please forgive me. We have 3 minutes left. So I won't go into too much more detail, but that's one of the answers. And oftentimes, when we're meeting in Salesforce in San Francisco, we get on a thread, and, you know, the first few meetings, we're kind of going into the types of things that are of major concern, and then we sort of focus on those things. And we've had a really good run doing that, going deeper into certain items. We have like 2 minutes, which is a lot. Any other thoughts? Yes.
I just wondered, so you were talking about earlier, you know, something happens and we have very natural instincts or reactions to something. So, you know, what strategy do you adopt to sort of manage those natural instincts? So if someone causes anger in you, instantly you kind of want to almost deflect it, or you want to react to it. So is there something you do to sort of calm your mind and say, okay, this situation, I need to step away and not say something I might regret later?
Well, a similar answer. When you have a home practice of mantra meditation, you'll find some fortifying gifts that come into your life that you're able to have. There's two things, actually, that are mentioned in the yoga literatures that you get from a very deep mantra meditation. One is a sense of non-attachment to the world when you need it. It's like a broader perspective that it's there for you. And the other is what's called gyan, or knowledge. And that is, you're able to see the difference between that which is higher energy and that which is lower energy, and give your attention mostly to the higher energy. So those kind of things come naturally through the practice of mantra meditation. And in California, after our philosophical discussions, we actually have a club where we do some of the mantra meditation, and a lot of people have their own home practice. And they're reporting really nice changes. They're feeling like, you know, with my home practice, which doesn't necessarily have to be a huge chunk of your day, but you definitely have to have it. Because, I recommend don't leave the house without centering yourself and finding that space. You don't find it every single time, but when you're consistent and you practice over time, it has a cumulative effect. And then when an angering situation comes up, you may see the anger, but then you also have some special power that you're developing through your own internal practice. The internal work's really important. Then you can deal with the external situations a lot better. So, there's whole books written on meditation. The Yoga Sutras is an exhaustive, you know, it was written thousands of years ago, and it's written by a sage named Patanjali, and he goes through a very detailed listing of the way the mind works, the psychology of the mind, the different states of mind. I mean, there's wakeful mind, there's a sleeping mind, there's dreaming mind, there's distracted mind, there's different states of mind. And I mean, this is like an important instrument that we have here. And to learning how to deal with it in a higher level, it can really make a difference systemically in different parts of your life. That's, you know, that's what a lot of these keys deal with in a really fundamental level. So I talked about gratitude as a practice. It is something that you can cultivate, and think about that. And just try to cultivate gratitude, and you'll notice how quickly it can change your mind in certain circumstances just by appreciating things, looking at them in a different light through gratitude. The second one is to unclutter your life. That's practical. You can start doing it right away. One of the experiences that's synonymous with self-realization, I have a lot of things, and I think I can't live without them. Okay, I get rid of them. What happens after that? Well, I lived. I'm still alive, you know. And then you feel kind of free, like actually, I don't need what I thought I needed before. And you can keep doing that to unclutter, both internally and externally, the very practical thing. And third is attention. Where attention goes, energy flows. And if you don't like what you're being subjected to in your life, change the subject. You have that power. You can change the subject. The kinds of things that you hear, the kinds of things that you're looking at, those things go in, and they accumulate in your heart. Thank you so much. It's just getting down here. I was really excited to meet all of you and to see you. And I deeply appreciate the fact that you took this hour out of your life to come here and sit together. And I hopefully, in any kind of a meeting that we have, that any of you have, any of us have, when we come together to talk about these subjects, inevitably we'll improve ourselves. It's one of the main ways to come to higher consciousness is this kind of deliberation. Talk about things from a different angle and refer to the practices that can help us get there. So from my heart, I wish you the best and keep up the great work.
Thank you.
Om Tat Sat. Thank you very much. Thank you.
Nacharyar Marman, Nacharyar Marman, Nacharyar Marman, Nacharyar Marman, hey, Nacharyar Marman, Nacharyar Marman, Nacharyar Marman, Nacharyar Marman.